3P05, welcome back to our last week's worth of course material. We got two audio lectures this week. First one is a guest lecture. I've also posted the outline for your final assignment, so make sure you have a look at Brightspace for that. There should be a folder that gives you the outline. It gives a folder that explains what the assignment needs to look like, and an audio lecture as well that explains what I'm looking for in greater detail. We have all four of your crisis responses now submitted. I really appreciate the work you've been doing this semester on your crisis responses, and I do believe that we're going to be able to use quite a few of these to actually help out some organizations. So I really want to thank you for that, and that's the first time I've run this this course in this fashion, so I'm very pleased with the results there. And today, we have guest lecturer Melissa Otterbein, who works for Special Olympics USA, and she's currently located just outside of Denver. And her insight about working for a nonprofit sport organization is incredibly important, and I'm extremely excited and thankful that she was able to take some time to spend with us in this class. So again, we have two audio lectures this week. Your final project's outline has now been posted. Make sure that you're finishing up strong here with your audio and form responses. I've been really pleased with the vast majority of your work so far this semester in that regard. And I do want to thank you, and I've done this a few times, but I listened to each one of those audio responses. I sort of been able to download them all at once and listen to them in a row. And I know it's hard. I've seen some of you have throughout the semester. I'm sure this is a familiar sort of task for you here, but many of you have sort of upgraded your recording setups here, and I appreciate that as well. Not for this course. I think it's actually a good investment, generally speaking, as you move throughout your time here, given how much of our lives is now spent with video calls and things like that. But it's also been great hearing you improve as speakers, and I think there is something to be learned from me to listen to yourself, even as it can make yourself uncomfortable to hear your own voice. I've really been impressed with the way that you've all improved. Your form responses are good. Again, I would just note that as you move throughout university, and this is not every last one of you, but as I've sort of been including in the announcements with my forum responses, you know, just plugging these into ChatGPT, I mean, it's pretty easy to spot, frankly, especially when most of the forum responses are directly linked to the things we're covering in this class. And while it might seem like an easy thing to do, you know, honestly, it's just not worth the hassle, and it's certainly not worth taking the grade deduction that you're going to get for doing that. So not just for this course, but as you move throughout university. Can you ask ChatGPT to write a form response for you? Yes, you can. But again, that is it's your own responsibility grades-wise at the end of the day. And for this course specifically, I appreciate how many of you have been taking time to just sort of set a routine and really think about the responses from a personal perspective, because many of them have been geared towards you and your career as you move through this. So we only have the 1 week of course material left. So finish strong here and finish up with that the nonprofit funding presentation assignments. And so make sure you have a listen to that outline. And with no further ado, here is Melissa. My life has been waiting for your love. My arms have been waiting for your love to fall. We are so fortunate to be joined by Melissa Otterbein, fellow managing editor of the Journal of Emerging Sports Studies. Melissa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Taylor. It's great to be with you.
Melissa.
And of course, your class.
Oh, yeah. We're so thrilled that you could be joining us here. And we'd love for you to start by telling us, what's your title and what's the name of the organization that you work for?
So I work for Special Olympics International, and my title is Senior Manager of Fitness and Healthy Lifestyles. And Special Olympics International, perhaps some of you may know it, we are actually our headquarters for all of the Special Olympics movement, which serves people with intellectual disabilities for lifelong sports participation. But we also do a fair amount of work in the health space. So we provide health screenings for athletes and focus on grants to promote fitness and health-related activities in and outside of sports settings for people with intellectual disabilities. So people on our teams may have physical disabilities, but our primary focus and inclusion for participation is an intellectual disability.
Wonderful. And whereabouts are you located?
So I am remote in Denver, Colorado, but our headquarters is in Washington, D.C. in the U.S.
Wonderful. Melissa, tell us about yourself. When did you first get involved in sport? What was your earliest experiences with sport?
Sport, honestly, has been a huge part of my life. For me, growing up, you know, in the spirit of a little bit of vulnerability, it really was an impetus for me to find a safe space to let out some of the challenges I experienced in my home environment. We had some addiction in my family growing up, and so I was actually able to foster a lot of strong social connections and led me to great role models in my community. And a lot of friendships formed through my sports participation as, you know, a young student in middle school and high school. And I also got to do some sports alongside my sister, who has Down syndrome, and she's a Special Olympics athlete. And we grew up in Pennsylvania in the U.S. And then from there, I decided to swim in college. I swam for my university and really just fell in love with all that sport taught me. It was a good mental health outlet for me and led me to great coaches and great role models. And started to work in the public health and health sector, but really missed the intersection of sport in my life. And so was able to start working in the sport for development sector, which I'd be happy to chat more about as we continue our conversation.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. That's wonderful. Sport for development, that's just a topic that comes up in our courses. How would you sort of explain the role that you currently fill right now in within a wider context of sport for development? So how would you explain to people who maybe don't even know what sport for development is, how it sort of impacts the work that Special Olympics do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I see sport for development more broadly, again, I'm sure in examples that you've discussed in class, is those sports programs that are interested in doing more than providing the sport and competition experience. Not that those aren't great avenues, but are really trying to embed either life skill development, health education delivery, health screening programs, peace and conflict resolution programs. And the way Special Olympics does that is through a few key areas. Some of those include some of our athlete leadership opportunities. We have a lot of athlete leadership opportunities where athletes can become trained to become something like a health messenger. And that's where they're trained in health education and health communications to then speak with legislative representatives about the health issues facing people with intellectual disabilities, or providing health education to peers on their sports team. We also have unified programming, which is where people without an intellectual disability compete with someone with an intellectual disability. And so I've been on a few sports teams that have done that, most notably a long distance running program where I'd run a 5K and I'm running at my fastest pace. My partner is running at his or her or their fastest pace. And then our points are combined to earn a score. And so it's a great way, I think, to help maybe break down stereotypes and help people come together who maybe normally wouldn't. And I think that that's where we can really capitalize on the power of sport.
Well put. That sounds fantastic. The combined score point, that's amazing. I can't even imagine running a single 5K myself, but I get it. That's amazing. Now, this is you've worked in several aspects of sport. You've worked in certainly the sort of public health sector, as you mentioned. You've also worked with USA Triathlon, I believe, as well. So that's sort of the high performance world. How would you sort of describe the biggest difference between the sport for development space, or the sort of, I think you broadly define it as Special Olympics falls within, and the high performance side? What types of differences have you experienced in both of those fields?
It's a great question. So I used to work at USA Triathlon, which in the US is our national federation for the sport of triathlon. And my role was in coaching education. And so I found a lot of our focus in coaching could be, sometimes we were really targeting coaches who are interested in that high performance sport coaching experience. And then we also had a youth track. And so a lot of that was focused a bit more on life skill and youth development. But I found, and then we also had a Paralympic coaching track as well. So I found that each of these areas were very similar in that we were thinking about how we were preparing our athletes for success across their lifespan. And in the US, I know Canada's done some great work on this, but in the US, we call it the American development model. And so it's how we long-term athlete development, I believe, is how Canada describes it. So it was helpful for us to look at where some of these intersections are of how we can promote broader development throughout the lifespan into our coaching and sports experiences. At USA Triathlon, I found that a lot of the sport and coaching experience was catered around, I think, really tailoring to an athlete's goals, whether it's someone just looking to get in shape for the first time or someone who actually is trying to get to an Olympic qualification or getting selected for an Olympic team. So something I appreciated was the broad range of experiences that offered. And at Special Olympics, we have a similar range in our coaching and coach trainings that we do. Actually coming up this summer is our Berlin World Games, which is really exciting. Over 7,000 athletes from, I think it's like over 100 countries. So I'm going to have to look that number up and get back to you. These are athletes who do have to qualify for this experience. And it is that global opportunity to participate in sport. So even within Sport for Development, it's been fun to see the strong range of competition we can also foster.
That's wonderful. And when you were working in both sectors there, the sort of high performance world and the SFD side of things, did you find that you had to use different skill sets? Did you find that the people you worked with were sort of skilled differently? Or I suppose, what skills do you recommend students developing if they wanted to work in either side, the SFD side or in the high performance side?
That's a really great question. In the Sport for Development side, I often had to find that I was working on understanding a bit of the research on maybe how to talk about life skills. Some audiences know that term very well, and others I don't think do. So really quantifying and talking about what are the skills you can develop through sport and how can it improve one's health and well-being, since that's a lot more of the focus. I think there was a lot stronger emphasis on evaluation. I've had to do in my role quite a fair amount of evaluation so that funders are able to go to a funder and say, here's what we're learning about our athletes' experience, how our programming is improving the lives of this population. In the high performance world, I'm finding there's a lot harder science skills on exercise science, physiology, perhaps anatomy. So a very heavy skill set, much more on the exercise science side of things. And even, you know, to the extent people are comfortable and again, want to choose additional certifications or licensures, nutrition really comes into play too. So I'd say the key skill sets would probably be more on that evaluation side of things, and really communicating the value of sport for development. And then in the high performance world, a bit more on the application of exercise science to coaching.
And you mentioned breaking down stereotypes is one of the positives of working with Special Olympics. And that certainly, so thank you so much for sharing that about being able to have worked in or competed or played in sport with your sister who has Down syndrome as well. When you speak to those stereotypes, when you first started working with Special Olympics, did you learn anything about the way that those stereotypes can affect athletes, or how would you sort of characterize, broadly speaking, the stereotypes that athletes with intellectual disabilities face in the sporting sense?
It's a great question. Some of the stereotypes that I find myself talking about, especially with colleagues on our teams who also are athletes, so they are our staff who have an intellectual disability and are also participating in Special Olympics as an athlete. Sometimes people talk about misconceptions around personality. For example, there's a consultant on our team I work with who has Down syndrome and gets a bit frustrated when people think about people with Down syndrome as being smiling and very affectionate and kind all the time. And he will say, you know, I have my hard days too. And, you know, I need it basically to be accepted that, you know, I try to be a positive person, but I'm going to have my hard days as well. And so recognizing that mental health affects all populations and normalizing that, I think, is a strong step we can all take. And then I think sometimes competition comes up as a key theme. A lot of us worldwide, you know, some of us are very competitive and others maybe, you know, we just want to get a 10-minute run in and, you know, go to yoga once a week and that's fine and that's great. But some of us, I think we all share this drive and the joy of competition and being an athlete. And I think something organizationally and in conversations I've had is like the joy of actually competing and getting into that mental toughness. and that a lot of our athletes want that hard, challenging environment too.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, many in the class can relate to that, I'm sure, you know, and it's one of the things that, you know, as you grow older and as you sort of age out of youth sport as an adult, you find lots of university age students find themselves missing that same feeling. So you can imagine, of course, it's something that unifies anyone who cares about sport, that craving for competition. What would you say is something that if someone was interested in working in the sport for development space, and they say they're sitting here in first or second or third year university, and they're a little ways from the job market right now, what would you say is your the biggest piece of advice you would lend to them before they enter the sport for development space?
I think this is a great time to get curious. I'm thinking back to before I had my first position in sport for development. I was taking classes, School of Public Health classes before I began a master's and was just getting curious about public health. I took a class on refugee healthcare and wrote my final paper on how sports could be used to empower the lives of refugees, and ended up submitting it to sportanddevelopment.org webpage. And for me, it was a great way to combine area I was curious and passionate about into my academic work. And then from there, these are organizations I can now follow up with or tag on social media and maybe start to build some of those connections or ask for a phone call or an email to learn more. So I would say looking for ways to combine your curiosity or passion or interest into your academic programming, whether that's writing a paper, maybe attending a conference, I think now is the time to start learning about those organizations. And it's funny, one of the first reasons why I ever created a Twitter account was because I was finding I could search sport for development and start learning and following a lot of the work of these organizations. It is a small world, but it is a world that you can quickly learn from through different platforms.
That's a great point too. I mean, we may have all had different reasons for joining Twitter, but the reasons for us staying on Twitter, I mean, it's harder and harder to rationalize at all times. It consumes your life so quickly. So we were describing in our courses here the sort of stages of your career as you enter sort of sport management fields. You've entered a stage where you're now in a leadership position. You are, you know, looked upon as a culture setter in your organization, and you're someone that that new hires would look to. When you if you were to imagine a situation where you were looking for new people to join your team, specifically in the Special Olympics, what are some sort of things that you look for in a new hire that's maybe fresh out of university?
It's a great question. I think one is, you know, knowing our population serves people with intellectual disabilities, maybe understanding experiences, if it's not with intellectual disabilities, but how maybe have you worked for people who may or worked with people who may be underrepresented. And so I think bringing in a little bit of that lens of diversity, equity, inclusion is really helpful. Knowing you all have talked extensively in many classes about that, that's a great lens to bring in. I think also looking at kind of that long-term thinking, I think is always really valuable. Sometimes, especially if it might be a nonprofit setting, I find we're close on and tight on capacity, and it can be tempting to stay in the urgent. But I think if a young professional can go in thinking and maybe bringing to the table, here's some ideas of where I think our programming could go in 3 to 5 years. Or what do you think about this long-term goal for our team? To me, that really reflects well when someone can think in that long-term approach and come prepared with curiosity and ideas.
I'm glad you brought up the nonprofit part of this. One of the sort of largest misconceptions I think about the nonprofit industry is the fact that everybody who works inside of it is a volunteer. So how would you characterize, I mean, not to say that, you know, there are thousands of, you know, $100,000 a year jobs waiting for anyone in any part of the sports industry, but how would you characterize that stereotype in terms of your experience in working in the sport industry regarding nonprofit work?
I'd say it can vary. I think, So maybe this could actually be a really interesting way to segue into a little bit about Special Olympics structure. So I work at our headquarters, and we are based in Washington, D.C. in the U.S., but we work with about 9 regions all over the world. And then those regions connect with country staff who then might implement programming in a province, in a state, or in a specific region within a country. And so each of those audiences might have different needs within their own nonprofit structures. We're all one global nonprofit. But I would say, while capacity can be a challenge, I think really leveraging partnerships has been something that's been key to our success. I think the great thing that I've been excited about at Special Olympics is we do have sports partners and some coaching education partners. And then we also have health partners who are incorporating elements of everything from health education to supporting coach education. So in the nonprofit world, where you may not always have all the resources out on the table that you're looking for, whether it's, you know, financial or staff capacity, I think it really is a space that invites a lot of partnership and collaboration, and if done effectively, can help really leverage what you're looking for to accomplish.
Well said. That's fantastic. Yeah, especially because partnerships and forging partnerships is so much of a part of the sports industry more broadly, whether that's in professional sport or nonprofits. That's good to know that, of course, if you've got that skill set, you can demonstrate those in the nonprofit space as well. And we've taken up a lot of your time here, Melissa. Thank you so much for joining us. Last question. If you were looking back at your time in university and you realize now that you'd be working in the sport industry, if you could go back and tell yourself something about the sport industry as you've experienced it, what would you tell a young Melissa Otterbein about the journey that she's about to undertake in the sport industry? And more broadly, what young students should know as they begin their journeys?
I think part of it is believing your passion is possible. Some of my first few jobs right out of undergrad, though they were in general health fields that I appreciated, sometimes it felt like, gosh, how am I ever going to get to that job where that really meets a lot of my passion and capabilities? And so I think part of it is continuing to get curious and ask questions and learn from organizations that interest you is a key part and key component. I think also leveraging and learning how to talk about your experiences as you develop is really important, because so many of us build transferable skills. And I think something I've been able to do, even though at times my career journey has felt very circuitous, is to talk about how each position taught you a skill that now applies to the position that you're trying to apply for. So I'd really encourage folks, and something that I've tried to do in my younger days is remember these are transferable skills, and really try and connect it to that audience or organization that you're thinking about maybe making a next step to work with.
Melissa, thank you so much on behalf of the class. Thank you so much for joining us, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you.